are now recording. This is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am current Summer Box Office Gamble Champion, Aaron. And as always, this is...
non-Summer Box Office Champion, Abe. Hello, Aaron. How are you?
I'm doing quite well, as this is one of our most exciting shows of the year. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. No crown for me, though. Listeners, Aaron is wearing a crown upon his head because he is the current champion.
Yeah, and it just, you know, some things naturally fit heads. What can I say?
Oh, the ego. Be careful, Aaron. Don't fly too close to the sun now.
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then we have these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentaries or something completely different. And this is something different from our commentary, but certainly standard for our year-end summer conversations, because we are at the end of another summer movie season, which does bring another summer movie gamble to the close. The 13th annual summer movie gamble, to be exact. It's really, really exciting. And yes, yeah. I did win
lucky
last
number
year's
13.
Summer gamble.
Exactly.
Lucky number 13. I won last year's summer gamble, so I'm here now to either retain this crown or hand it off to somebody new. So let's see. Let's see about that in a bit. Joining us to discuss the results of the 13th annual summer movie gamble, we have from Fast Film Reviews, He Knows What You Did 28 Years After the Last Freakier Friday to Elio with Those Weapons from the Dragon's Naked Gun Store, which Megan was caught stealing from. It's Mark Hoban.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Mark.
Great to be back.
Also joining us from the Forgotten Filmcast, he sketched a nobody clown in a bad guy's fantastic F1 Thunderbolt before a materialist Superman reckoned with his bloodlines and ruined his friendships with K-pop demon hunters. It's Todd Liebenow.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Good to be here.
Hey, Todd.
Hello.
All right. Glad to have you both here. How are you both doing this evening?
Doing great. Yeah, I as you guys know, I always enjoy the summer movie gamble, and I'm interested in hearing how it all kind of shook down.
Mm-hmm. Well, it should be exciting. And we gather certain guests for the show because either maybe it's one of you guys that won, or maybe one of you guys both lost, or maybe has nothing at all. And I'm just completely throwing you off by inviting you on this podcast. It could be any number of things. Who knows?
Who knows?
But that's what we're going to get.
I'm sure I get the crying towel because, you know, this is my first time in it. And like, it's always been fun watching it from the outside. Because I can be like, ha, 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 they don't know. But I know I'm terrible at these things. So, yeah.
Well, and now the pressure is real, Todd.
I know.
That does make it clear. Yes, Todd, you are a first year in the summer movie gamble. So mm-hmm. congratulations to just getting this far, honestly.
Oh,
you know, we've taken out far more people. That doesn't make any sense.
It's an honor.
Thrill just to be nominated. Yes.
I was going
to
say, it's an honor just to be invited.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, how sweet.
And of course, Mark, you've been among our first guests since the very beginning when we first started doing these summer movie gambles. So
glad I'm an OG.
Exactly. Glad to have you back here once. You're a former champion as well. I believe at least twice, maybe. I think you've won maybe twice.
Was it twice or was it once?
I feel like you would know better than anyone. So
you would think we'd have great archives of this stuff, but we really don't.
Our listeners might know.
Mind is your archive. You just go to that. Yeah,
the mind palace.
I'm pretty good, but it's like 13 of these. It's hard to keep track of.
Yeah.
The summer movie gamble wing of the Academy Museum is not in the works yet, I take it.
Like, we have it. Again, if once we get those interns, they can go back to that. Here's the thing. It would not be hard for Abe and I to just listen to, like, 5 minutes of each of those episodes and those winners. And
I don't know if, like, 5 minutes. I think we just need, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, it wouldn't take very long at all to actually find that information.
One day when we have our summer... You know,
we'll just actually do it.
We'll
assign ourselves because we only need so many. I think our spreadsheet we have goes back to, I think it goes back to 2017, but we don't have any actual answers there. It goes back to 20. We don't have the rankings at that point. We just have our stats, but we can find out these.
We can easily. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
It's like, I've won like twice.
You've won twice.
Adam's won twice. Mark, you've won at least once.
Marcus once.
Jose's won, of course. Mark, who can forget that Marcus won? Maxwell's won, I think, twice. Maybe
did Alan win once?
Alan won once. Brandon is our current global champion because he's the only one that won when we did our COVID
pandemic.
Where we had the worldwide box office instead of the domestic.
Yep.
And since we don't plan to go back to worldwide, he remains the global champion on this podcast. So yeah, we certainly got a lot of range in our victors here, but that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go over our results for the 13th annual Summer Movie Gamble. Before we get to that, though, just to quickly kind of get things into perspective here, without going too far into details as far as the movie specifically, because we want to talk about that later. I want to know from you, Todd and Mark, what did you think of this? And Abe, what did you guys think of this year's summer movie season? Todd, let's start with you. What was your summer movie season like?
I mean, I had a lot of fun. I think in general, when I think on it, I don't know that there was too many like wow moments for me. I mean, there were plenty of movies that I enjoyed, but you know, am I going to say that there was a movie that I was just like, oh, that's just so amazing, that's a, you know, fantastic example of a summer movie? I don't know that I'd go that extreme, but I certainly had a lot of fun at the movies. You know, a lot more positive experiences than negative experiences, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I think it was a really good summer. I think there were some surprises of movies that I didn't expect to like as much as I did. And some of the things that I expected to like more, I didn't. But overall, I think it was a good summer. And there's always a nice mix of blockbusters and indie films to kind of entertain me. And I think there's a couple blockbusters I really enjoyed. And there's also a few little indie films that I liked a lot as well. And it was a nice mix. The surprise I had, though, is that the overall box office seemed to be a bit lower than what I expected, just in general. I expected each film in the top 10 to do a little more than what they did. But as far as the movies are concerned, I did enjoy quite a few things.
All right. Hey, how about you?
You know, in like junior high school, when you started getting yearbooks and people would write, have a good summer, you know, it was a good summer. It was a lot of fun movies that came out. A lot of ones that, to Mark's point, smaller ones that I really enjoyed, larger ones that I really enjoyed, which we'll get to later. But overall, it was a good summer, and seemingly it went by too fast. And yet it was also a long, lengthy summer as well. I can't believe that we're already at fall. Aaron and I joked a couple episodes ago about already being October, like very soon. Mm-hmm. So it's just incredible just how quickly time is moving. But I had a good summer with the movies. How about you, Aaron?
Well, I can remember signing in your yearbook, "Sorry, I'm the first."
But eggs.
It was 3 weeks after school it ended, so I was like, "All right," but
at least you didn't do a Milhouse, "See you in the car."
Eyebrows. I enjoyed summer quite a bit as far as the movies are concerned. There's a lot of things I was looking forward to that I think delivered. There were some surprises, and I'm not someone that tends to get too surprised by things, so I was happy that there were some things that suck out in that regard. And even like movies I didn't expect to be all that good didn't like make me want to burn the theater down, so that's always a good sign as well, right?
You're the one.
but no, I think I was relatively pretty positive on the both the blockbuster side of things, as well as all the, usually I'm always happy to find all the indies that I find and see mm-hmm. throughout the summer and recommend them as much as I can, but there were certainly a lot of good things going on throughout the summer that I was quite pleased with on a studio level. But I can see where Todd's coming at as far as I have a few films that I like quite a bit that I saw quite a few times, but I wouldn't say there was necessarily, usually I find maybe more than one. I think I had like one or two that like kind of satisfied that sort of, this is just as good as summer gets.
The summer movie.
But I can see, Tom, where you're coming at as far as there wasn't like a just, oh my God, look at this. This is just the greatest thing I've seen in the summer in a while.
Yeah.
Which, you know, even then can always be, doesn't always occur, but you know, it's always nice to see when it actually happens. But yeah, all right. Well, let's move forward. Let's get to the box office of said summer movies. We have our, I got a whole list here. I'm going to start from the top.
Yeah.
And I'll do the domestic and the worldwide for all these movies. So first up, number one with the bullet, Lilo and Stitch, $423 million, $1.03 billion worldwide.
Whoa.
Disney remake city couldn't be stopped.
Yeah.
I underestimated Lilo and Stitch for sure, which I shouldn't have, because it's like you go to those Disney parks and Stitch is everywhere. People go nuts for Stitch. So,
Well, there's at least one person that will do you one better because they didn't even have Lilo and Stitch on their top 10. Whether that was a mistake on their part or just a thought that didn't occur to them, we'll never know. Number two. Number two is Superman. Mm-hmm. 352 million domestic, 611 worldwide, and counting. Number three, we had Jurassic World Rebirth, 338 domestic, 856 worldwide, the second biggest worldwide of the summer. Fantastic Four is at number four, 266 million domestic and counting, 506 worldwide. How to Train Your Dragon. It's at 263 million, 629.
Not How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah. And certainly not, yeah, not How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah.
It's a gift that keeps giving, I say that.
That's how long as they name the sequel How to Number Two Train Your Dragon. You know.
Exactly.
How to Train Your Dragon?
With a U and an R, Prince style, yeah.
I'd love to see that actually happen. Prince they just style. Put it, they just put a two in there, and it's like, we just want to save space. We had the Roman numerals, and they're like, nah. Number six, we had Mission Golden Impossible Dash the Final Reckoning, 197 million domestic, 598 worldwide. I'll be curious if Paramount tries to find a way to drag those two over the over 200 into 600. Number seven, Thunderbolts asterisk. AKA the new Avengers, 190 domestic, 382 worldwide. Number eight, F1 colon the movie, 188 domestic, 613 worldwide. It just passed Superman worldwide, by the way. Literally today. It did that. Number nine, Final Destination colon Bloodlines, 138 domestic, 300 worldwide. Ooh. And number 10, we have Weapons at 135 domestic and 235 worldwide. A late break and yet a huge success.
Yeah.
Weapons.
Great job by Zach Krieger.
Yeah. Knocking out potential top teners such as Freakier Friday, which is at number 11. The Bad Guys 2 at number 12. And Elio at number 13. Also is close.
All the way down at number 13. Poor Elio.
Poor Elio. Also down here, we have 28 years later, Ballerina, Karate Kid Legends, The Naked Gun. The summer was so successful for A24, by the way, that Materialists beat Megan 2 and Smurfs. To put things into perspective there. A24's Materialists, which is almost at 100 worldwide.
I mean, who would ever put Megan in their top 10? Like, that would make no sense.
And who would even put it in their Dark Horses, right, Mark?
And just to be clear, Megan's not even in the top
20. Well, Dark Horse maybe, but top 10?
Megan's not even in the top 20, just to be clear on this. It's number 21 currently. There we have it. We have our top 10 films of the summer at the box.
Solid.
A list that none of us got exactly right, as is usual when it comes to the summer box office.
Okay, if somebody got it exactly right, then I would question maybe they have a time machine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've got to go check their garage for a DeLorean.
Weapons would have been a good hindsight guess for a lot of people. I think.
That would have been really incredible if somebody actually put it on their top 10.
And we'll go over these lists here. And some people had some interesting choices that reflect on how we do things here. But let's get to it. Let's get to the results of the 13th annual Summer Movie Gamble. We have a total of 14 places. That means there are some ties because there are 17 participants. Mm-hmm. And here we go. We're going to start off with a tie, in fact, for 14th place with 37 points, Mark Hoffmeier and Todd Liebenow.
Oh, hey, see? I knew I'd be in the basement.
But you made it on the list.
Yeah. Did you not make it on the list?
Exactly. What a participation trophy. It's like, you made it on the list, Todd.
So let's go over your list here. You had a Karate Kid, Smurfs, and the Bad Guys 2, and your Dark Horses, so none of that did any difference.
No.
Megan 2 didn't help you. Ballerina didn't help you. No. Elio didn't help you. You mentioned you did have Lilo and Stitch pretty low. You got it at number 6 here, which, that's a... That got you some points, but not many. Let's see. You had Superman at the top. You had How to Train Your Dragon in there towards the top. Fantastic Four. Pretty close. Thunderbolt you had pretty high up as well, and that's kind of number 7. So you can see like where things are. You had a good portion of the top 10, but yeah, just kind of
jumbled around. Yep. Yeah.
Mark Hoffmeyer, he had Ballerina, 28 Years Later, Freakier Fridays, Dark Horses. Let's see, he's got Megan, Bad Guys, Elio. So, like, a common theme is going to be, by the way, Elio.
Elio, yeah, no. I think part of it with Elio, I was so caught up in how well Inside Out 2 did that I was like, okay, Pixar's on the up, you know, but original Pixar now is
even Elemental.
Even Elemental made the top 10. So for Elio go all the way down where it did, it's a little bit of a shock.
It took Elemental time too. I remember when Elio struggled the first weekend. I said, "Well, maybe it'll have legs," but
which it did. It did carry on. It wasn't high on the list, but it certainly still made the cut this year. Though not the case for Pixar. But yeah, Mark Hoffmeyer. He also had he had the right combination of the top.
Yeah, he has the Bad Guys too in his top 10, which didn't help out.
But, Megan or Elliot. But yeah, let's see. Like most people had Jurassic fairly high, which is generally a helpful thing, but it was with Superman being number 2 and Jurassic being most of the default either 2, 1 or 2, that's what's going to hurt you when it comes to getting those individual points. All right. So, let's move on from there. 13th place, we have Jay Kluwit at 39 points.
Hey. Friend across the pond.
Friend across the pond, indeed. He once again has same kind of dark horses: Freakier Friday, Bad Guys, Megan, Elio, number 10. Sorry, The Naked Gun, Karate Kid. Just a lot of things just not helping him at all there. It's just a matter of order. He had Fantastic Four fairly high. He had Lilo and Stitch fairly low at 4th place. Mm-hmm. So, it's just a matter of order. Number 12. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. Scott Mendelson at 42 points.
You mean box office guru Scott?
I was gonna
Mendelson.
Say,
office
guru. Scott he does. Mendelson. He does this for a living.
You know who used to pay him? Forbes.
he puts his heart in the wrong places at these things. He has.
I love that Scott goes with his gut though.
He does though. He does. Yeah. He's a
sticks with his guns. Goes with his gut.
He can analyze after the fact like nobody's business, but beforehand. Bad Guys 2, Karate Kid, he put a lot of faith in Bring Her Back as the horror movie to root for instead of Weapons.
Well, he had it as a dark horse.
As a dark horse, but in terms of which horror movie to choose, he went with the wrong horse. F1, he snuck in there at number 10. That's not a bad spot for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Megan, though, he had in there. Elio, he had pretty high at number 5. That didn't help at all. Let's see. Otherwise, he had Superman number 1.
I think the rule that Elio is teaching us is that if Pixar has a film with a number in it, bet on it. If it's an original thing, then
these days,
I'm gonna keep that in mind for next summer, Mark.
That's the unfortunate. Well, there's
I really number. Still thought it was I thought it was enough though for it to be I don't know where I put it. I think pretty I actually had it at 8, but at least 10 next time. But
yeah, and Aaron and I had a special bonus kind of talking about like some of the stuff around Ellie, which was quite upsetting. So, yeah, it's kind of unfortunate just what happened to it at the studio level, too.
Right.
But, all right. Next, we have a tie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I misranked this. We have a three-way tie for 45 points. We have Adam Gentry, Philip Price, and Terrence Johnson all at 45 points apiece.
But cracking the top 10.
Cracking the top 10. let's see. Adam is the one who did not have Lilo and Stitch at all in his top 10.
Mm.
I don't know if that was just an error on his part or just purposely didn't choose it, but there it is. Somehow, for his dark horses, he decided to go with Caught Stealing, Nobody 2, and The Roses. I would have been amazed to see The Roses and Caught Stealing both make, I guess, $80 million in their opening
in one weekend.
Yeah, they were released so late. Yeah,
but he has so much confidence in his top 10. That's probably why he was like, "Hey, let me just go wild on my wild dark horses."
Top 10 wise, he went for Freakier Friday in his top 10. He had Smurfs at number 5, which that did not pay off. And then the rest is just. And I know what you did.
Freakier Friday as a number 10 pick isn't terrible. That actually could have happened. Yeah.
Yeah, he also gets like a couple of them dead on, which is why his points are helpful.
It made up for some other choices out there for sure.
Jurassic World and F1, he gets right on.
Mm-hmm. Philip Price also has Freakier Friday number 10. He has F1.
Were they working on the same sheet?
he has F1 in his Dark Horse. So that got him a point right there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Everything else is down to the order.
And he gets Mission Impossible dead on.
Yeah. He has Ballerina and Elio in there, so that didn't help him. Mm-hmm. Then Terrence. Terrence is one of the few that did have Final Destination Bloodlines in the mix. He had in his Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. He has Megan 2 and Bad Guys. He has Smurfs in number 10. That didn't help. F1, Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible all around where they need to be. Elio didn't help.
Did you say it was the only one that had Final Destination?
One of the few that had Final Destination as a potential. Yeah.
That was one that, I mean, even though I knew I didn't have it on my list, I was thrilled that it got that high. you know, I know we'll talk about things later on, but that was a fun time this summer.
Yeah.
It was Final Destination.
So. It was a nice surprise as far as just seeing the fan reverence for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, 300 worldwide for that movie. It's,
And don't trust kids with pennies, you know?
I don't trust kids in general, Abe.
Yeah, but for Terrence, like, it basically, like, he's actually just, like, one away for a lot of his stuff. So that probably helps out for the points.
Let's see. What's next here? It is number 9. It is for 48 points. Abe!
Bang, bang! Cracking the top 10, Abe. Good job. for my Dark Horses, I've got The Bad Guys 2, Megan... Karate Kid Legends, which I bet too high on. For my top 10, number 10, F1, 28 Years Later, Elio, Thunderbolts, Fantastic Four, How to Train Your Dragon, Superman, Lilo and Stitch, Mission Impossible, Jurassic World, Rebirth. Bet too high on Mission Impossible, for sure. Elio made the mistake. And then kind of like a little bit off on some of the numbers here, but sort of with everybody else, just in a different order. But
28 years, like... At the outset, when it first came out and it had a pretty decent opening, there was a thought that was like, oh, maybe 28 years will kind of break up.
Yeah, I think that I was kind of going off of the hype train. People were just like, 28 years, you know, they're back.
And I like, it's going to make it as well.
Yeah. But yeah, at least I beat Scott.
At least you beat Scott. At number 8, with 49 points, we have Peter Paris.
Hey.
Peter has Final Destination in his Dark Horses, so that helps him. He also has Freakier Friday, Naked Gun, Megan and Smurfs in his top 10.
Not helping.
Fantastic Four at number 2, so a little higher there.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else, pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up is, at 50 points in 7th place, me. I am right in the middle of the pack here.
Take that crown off, Aaron.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, exactly, Mark. You take that crown off right after this episode, young man.
I just want to beat Aaron. That's how I feel.
I had Ballerina, Karate Kid, and Bad Guys in my Dark Horses, which I'm fairly happy with as far as not putting them in my top 10, because I had Bad Guys in there for a very long time. But I did go with Megan, too, which was a worse choice, apparently, for top 10. F1 I had in there at number 9. Elio didn't help me. Mission Impossible, Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts. A lot of these are like one or two off.
Right.
How to Train Your Dragon. And then my big gambit was putting Superman at number 1. And then Lilo.
Which isn't terrible.
It was on the way, but Lilo just couldn't be stopped. What messed me up though is I should have put Lilo ahead of Jurassic World. That would have at least saved me. That would have got me some more points.
Yeah.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
And I was gunning for the whole will Thunderbolts make more than Fantastic Four just by being out first. That was the other thing that I was thinking of, and didn't pay off. That said, Fantastic Four didn't exactly break the bank either. So.
Mm-hmm.
All right. At number 6, we have our global champion, Brandon, with 51 points.
Hey.
He had Ballerina, Freakier Friday, and the Dark Horse. We had F1, so we got a point there. Mm-hmm. Once again, Megan, Bad Boys, and Elio. All Bad Guy, and Elio all in a row, so that didn't help anything. But then he has Thunderbolts, right spot. Mission Impossible, right spot. Fantastic Four is in the right spot. He's got Superman 2 low. Basically, if he swapped Superman and How to Train Your Dragon, he would have been in a better position.
Mm-hmm.
But then he had Jurassic World as his number one. So that, you know, obviously.
Yeah. But certainly helped out with the three dead on. Yeah.
All right. Number five. The top five now.
Top five.
52 right. points. It's ex-king Marcus Robinson. Boy, will we hear it from him later.
No, we won't.
You know, it's funny because Marcus won 2 years ago, and it's still we're still hearing about it.
Yeah, sure.
I had to remind myself, no, Aaron won last year, yeah. not Marcus.
For a whole year, he's you know, yeah, and this is something
that. Right, and this is something that the listeners are not going to know about. It's this, no. yeah, it's the this group chat that
yeah.
has he's become, and I'm he's my friend, but he has become so insufferable in that group chat, and I haven't expressed these thoughts, but
yeah,
it's been a lot.
It's a whole year he's like tooting his own horn, and then a whole second year he's like, I'm going to make it back on top.
And the cut and the pasting of the memes with his face on the wrestlers, and, you know, it's just like, wow, this is really taking a lot of time.
I'll just say, I felt like I was a benevolent leader. All I did was just make sure the trains ran on time. Kept everybody updated on where they needed to be updated. Didn't need to make my own hashtags to explain that I'm the true winner.
How did he fare? What was his list, Aaron?
Marcus, he had the bad guys at 28 years and Smurfs in his dark horses, so that did nothing for him.
Mm-hmm.
F1 he had in there, or no, sorry, wrong list. Freakier Friday and Megan and Elio, like, once again, these killers
didn't help.
Mm-hmm. Megan and Elio are really just like destroying people on these lists.
Yeah.
Let's see, Mission Impossible, Fantastic Four, Thunderbolts, all in like the wrong order, but like in the right,
like
area.
One away, yeah.
And then he has the right top. Or no, he doesn't because he doesn't have Fantastic Four. So no, it's just a matter of order for the rest of his
list. It is like just one away, but he gets Superman dead on.
And he does have Lilo at the top at number one.
Yeah, that's 13 points, which is can't really make up 13 points. That's pretty good.
And weirdly, that was not a consensus pick, having Lilo at the number one spot. So
yeah, we might have made fun of him for it at the time.
Next up, in fourth place, maybe a surprise or something, Yancey Burns coming in hot.
Surprise for me, too.
Yancey Burns, who has Smurfs, Final Destination, it is a dark horse, although if I know what you did last summer. He has Life of Chuck at number 10. He thought that might take off. That didn't pay off. let's see. Thunderbolts, F1, Elio's in there, which, you know.
You got to admire those big swings, though. Like, Life of Chuck, even in the beginning of the summer, I thought, whoa, that's a big swing.
Then he gets a few pretty close with Mission Impossible, Fantastic Four, Superman. And then he just kind of rearranges the top ones with Dragon as number one.
Yeah. But a couple dead on, yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, he has enough dead on and enough that are close enough, so his points just added up really well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number three, past winner, Alan Aguilera, 58 points.
Whoop, whoop.
Alan came in. He's the only person that had weapons anywhere. He has it as Dark Horse,
mm-hmm.
along with Eddington and Friendship. So he was all on the A24 train, apparently, when it came to Dark Horses. he had 28 years later at his number one, as number 10. But then he has Megan. One of the few that doesn't have Elio anywhere on his list. So he's got that going for him. Which helps, because, I mean, here he is.
And also, he's got, you know, he's got some that didn't make it either.
Yeah, but then, yeah, that's just a matter of order. But, you know, he's got Thunderbolts, F1, Mission Impossible, all around where they need to be, Fantastic Four. He has Jurassic World number one, so he has just order at the end.
Yep, yeah, he's a lot of one away for the top few, and then he gets, like, pretty good stuff.
All right, so now, we're in a predicament here, because we have a tie for second place.
Oh,
now that only means that after second place there'd be a number one. So I guess I'll just go out and say Jose and Maxwell are at number two with 67 points. So let's just recap that real quick before I let that sink in. Jose, past winner, F1's in his dark horses. That certainly helps him. He had Karate Kid in the top 10. That didn't help, neither did Elio. But Final Destination, right spot. Mission Impossible, one away. How to Train Your Dragon, one away. Thunderbolts in there. Fantastic Four, one away. Superman, one away. Jurassic World, one away. Lilo and Stitch, number one. That's
pretty
a
good.
Yeah, mix of
yeah.
Again.
Yeah, pretty good. And then one away, and then number one, dead on. Pretty good, Jose.
Of course, we do have the newly engaged Maxwell Haddad, with he had Freakier Friday, Megan and Ballerina as dark horses, so nothing there. But he has F1, which, you know, it helps 28 years later. No, Elio, no. But then Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible, Dragon, three in a row right there. Superman, yep. Couple away. Fantastic Four, though, one away. Jurassic World, right spot. Or not, one away. But Lilo and Stitch, right spot.
Right spot.
So there you go. A lot of points collected.
He does love Disney, so really helped out.
It did help out. So I guess that only leaves one person left here.
Oh, my goodness.
No, that has not been mentioned yet.
Who could it be? Who could it be?
At number one, the new champion of the 13th annual Summer Movie Gamble, it is Mark Hoban with 72 points.
Yes!
Congratulations.
72, 72 is a killer points. Score.
Good score. One of the higher scores in our records, whoop, whoop. If I'm not mistaken.
Good job, Mark.
Thank you. I accept this award.
Let me take this crown off.
I would say.
What a gracious champion.
Yeah, so I am proud to accept the crown. Thankful that it has been restored to its rightful owner. As a past champion and now the current winner, I accept the victory with humility, but not just for myself, but for everyone who had to endure Marcus's victory lap in 2023, and then Aaron's counterattacks. You basically were going against Marcus's attacks in 2024. But I feel like order has been restored and justice has been served.
Congratulations, Mark. May your reign.
I will be a benevolent ruler. I will not.
There you go. No memes of yourself.
Why do I feel like I just listened to Palpatine's speech at the end in Revenge of the Sith?
Right.
Wait a minute. That's our base right behind you.
It sounds good, but something insidious is lurking.
We shall have peace.
Well, Mark, you did a terrific job here because let's just go over this. Ballerina, 28 years later, Freakier Friday. That's the wrong list.
No.
Karate Kid, Ballerina, Megan 2. Got that out of the way. Who cares?
F1, yeah, that's Dark Horses.
Right, yeah. F1, right in there. 28 years later. All right. Didn't matter. Elio, okay, didn't matter. Mission Impossible, one away. How to Train Your Dragon, one away. Thunderbolt. I keep going the wrong fucking list. Sorry. Hold on. Let me spotlight this. Mission Impossible, one away. Thunderbolts, one away. How to Train Your Dragon, dead on. Fantastic Four, dead on. Jurassic World, dead on. Superman, dead on. Lilo and Stitch, dead on. It was a killer.
That's hard. To beat.
Is that the best I've ever done? Do you know?
Probably.
72 is very high.
72 is pretty high.
Anybody.
I cannot, you know, and when I do these lists, I always think, okay, you know, I put a lot of thought into it. So, I mean, it did play out like I thought, but this is the first time top five. I don't think I've ever done that.
Yeah, that's
pretty incredible.
That's pretty strong. Yeah,
like you have four dead on, which is 40 points, and then you also have the number one, which is another 13.
And I have to say, I follow this list very closely. Fantastic Four and How to Train Your Dragon were flipped up until this weekend. I mean, it might have even happened on, you know, Sunday.
Wait a minute, are you the time traveler?
It was catching up. Like by last week, I knew it. Like it would have to.
Yeah, yeah. And
Fantastic Four was coming down to those two.
It will continue to make money. So I mean, the disparity between Fantastic Four and How to Train Your and Disney re-released. How to Train Your Dragon in more theaters. And I was like, I saw that. I was like, no, I don't want that to make more money than Fantastic Four. So
yeah, they're really trying to cross that milestone.
I mean, F1 also is right behind Thunderbolts. Like if the summer movie season didn't end this week, it could very well catch up and pass Thunderbolts and cause another wrinkle in this, but it didn't, fortunately, because that would just make too much math. Even Weapons is going to pass Final Destination Bloodlines like in a week from now. That's how close these things can
get. Incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
It really makes a difference. I remember, I think I won 2015 because Straight Outta Compton like just made enough money within the right amount of time, and snuck in the top 10.
Yes. And you know, I remember last year, Fall Guy ended up being number 10, but over time it was Alien. Alien ultimately was the number 10 film.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you have to, because it was released. So you have to think about that. You have to think if the movie is being released in the second week of August, is it going to be able to make enough money to enter the top 10?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have even thought Weapons. Well, it was like August 8th. I would, I mean,
late release, yeah.
Who knew it would just, I mean, it really like.
It's opening weekend, very strong.
Strong weekend. Like, surprise,
it caught me off guard. Yeah.
Wanted to see it.
Yeah. Aaron, well, we had some listener submissions too.
We did have some listener requests. Requests.
Ooh, Casey Kasem?
Yeah. Yeah. They that's for the songs. Yeah. Dave Maloof, he got in here. He had F1, Megan, and Weapons in his Dark Horses. So he's got another one with Weapons for a change. Mm-hmm. But he got 2 points right there for those Dark Horses. Then he has 28 Years Later, which obviously didn't help, but Fantastic Four. Then Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible, Materialists. Strangely, up there. Although it did better than other movies that are in the top 10 list. Yeah. There you go. Let's see. Elio didn't help him, but then he had Superman, How to Train Your Dragon, Jurassic World, Lilo and Stitch. He got 49.
Pretty good. Total. Yeah, 49.
But then there's this curious listener, Mark, you might know about this guy, Ruben Acevedo.
I'm in awe, but some of his, like, Weapons and, yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
so he has Weapons in his Dark Horses along with Ballerina and Karate Kid. He then has 28 Years Later in Elio. Okay, whatever. But then Thunderbolts, Mission Impossible, F1, How to Train Your Dragon. Then he has Fantastic Four, Jurassic, Lilo, and Superman. It's all down to order, but he has 64 points.
It's very high.
He'd be number three among
our people. Number three, which is incredible. So he's not cheating off your paper, Mark, but he's close.
Right, and I should have listened about Weapons. I didn't think, you know, it would – I didn't even put it as a Dark Horse, but he was right about – I mean, at least the Dark Horse. He saw the potential.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, since I do send a – I send a gift in the mail for the winner of our summer game, we'll be able to be able to be two gifts for our listeners.
one address.
Yeah. So very good. Yeah, we got our rankings out of the way, and we'll see how.
I don't know if you guys feel this too, but it feels like a breath of fresh air. You know, now that we don't have to listen to Marcus,
it does feel like the clouds have lifted to some degree. Like, we're despite my efforts to be just a decent ruler.
Well, I hope that Marcus doesn't like double down and be like, I'm going to get it out loud
that we're not going to have to worry about later on.
I promise if I decide to do any memes, it's going to reference Marcus and not you, Aaron.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that.
I'll have to find some like wrestling meme of some wrestler, like, you know, with another wrestler in a chokehold, and we'll like put them.
No, don't give in to Marcus's.
No, don't do that.
Yeah, don't give in to Marcus's. Positive likes. You have to have a meme of just like things that he hates,
or, you know, like the end of the DCEU or something, like his favorite movie, BDS.
Or just like Marcus. Well,
I did notice that you did choose the Phoenician scheme as our poster.
Yes.
Our poster, and I'm sure Marcus is going to really appreciate that.
Marcus, famous Wes Anderson fan,
right.
Looking at the points, by the way, pretty good even spread. We got a couple of the 60s, some of the 50s, some of the 40s, some of the 30s. Like, it wasn't a slaughter. It wasn't a lot of people that just like barely made points.
Right.
We only had, you know, two ties.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of traffic jams. Yeah.
Three ties, I guess. Yeah. But then, you know, obviously, Mark, you're up in the 70s here, up in the higher echelon.
Incredible stuff.
thank you.
But we've had, I mean, Todd, you had 37 points. We've had lower scores. Don't worry.
I would have done
this game longer.
but you know what? Actually, Todd, to your credit, I think people remember the tops and the bottoms, and then the middle is just kind of like a blur. So.
Exactly. We always talk about the best films of the year or the worst films of the year. So
right, and then, you know,
I'm happy to be here in the basement. That's fine. You know, I'm literally in the basement. That's where I podcast from.
The only way is up.
Not positive. Yeah,
that is a way to look at it. Well, very good. Now that we've got over our rankings, and we anticipate the reactions that the rest of the players will have once they start these lists as well, we can go over some other fun things concerning the summer at the movie theaters. Some of our thoughts on what we thought we liked the most, what maybe didn't work for us, some surprises, some disappointments. So with that in mind, let's start off the best. What were our best films of this? What would you consider to be the best films of the summer? Let's start with our new champion, Mark Hovind. What were your best films of the summer?
Well, so we've talked about it, but Weapons. This is one of the sort of the big surprises. I mean, I loved Barbarian, so I had a feeling that I was going to enjoy Weapons as well, because I think Zach Cregger is a, you know, interesting director. But I really wasn't prepared for the way it unfolded and the sort of the beautiful way that the film was told in different sections from each person's, you know, perspective. And I told Aaron in a text that I haven't been this excited about a horror film since Midsommar. There have been other films. I mean, he brought up Nope, which I also enjoyed quite a bit as well. But I was more prepared to like Nope. Like I knew that, you know, I had already liked Get Out. And so I was prepared that Nope was also going to be something I would enjoy. But Weapons, it blew me away. I mean, I liked Barbarian, but Weapons even, I liked it even more. So that was probably my biggest surprise. And I guess you'd also say it's a blockbuster that I loved. But I had to mention it first because it was the thing that really impressed me. Another film that there's a couple of small films that didn't make a lot of box office, but I just want to single out. First of all, Eddington. Mm-hmm. I know this is kind of a controversial film. Some people, you know, didn't care for it. And, you know, again, we're talking about Ari Aster, who I loved Midsommar. And I really wasn't prepared to like Eddington because he has this very sort of negative worldview. But I just liked the way that he told the story. And I thought he navigated the story of the pandemic in a way that kind of played to both sides. And I thought it was a very deft balancing act. I think Joaquin Phoenix gives one of the best performances of the year. And he goes from a don't want to spoil too much, but he goes from a character that you actually are on his side, I would say, in the beginning, and then he becomes somebody that you completely aren't on his side at all. He does it in a way that seems believable, like a real person could be doing these choices when pushed to the brink. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a pressure cooker of a film. It did bring back a lot of sort of unpleasant memories, but now because we're, you know, 5 years from those days, you can kind of laugh at some of it and say, oh yeah, we really did that. Or these are things, you know, I was afraid to touch a door handle or, you know, somebody coughed in public. It was mm-hmm. like, you know, they had done something horrible. But anyway, that was something that I really liked. And then, little film and Aaron will appreciate this, Sketch. It was a little family film mm-hmm. About a mother has passed on in the beginning of the film and the father is raising the two kids and the little girl has a sketchbook and the drawings come to life. And it's done in such a touching way. It has to do with grief and coming to terms with your grief. And it's really kind of a beautiful film. Not a lot of people saw it, but it's definitely the kind of film that I like to sing its praises because I don't think many people saw it, and it is something that I thought was quite good. And definitely, I'm not singing it because people didn't see it. It really is one of the best things I think I saw this summer. Mm-hmm. So that, and then just really quickly, it wasn't a film meant for theaters. It was a streaming film for Netflix, but they put K-pop Demon Hunters into theaters, and I had already seen it on Netflix and I was sure. familiar with the soundtrack and I had been listening to it. So I'm familiar with the music, but I wrote even in my review before they made the decision to put it in theaters that it belonged on a big screen. And I was right. It's great with the sound and it actually does look even more cinematic when you see it on a big screen. You appreciate the animation in a way that you can't on a TV screen. And I mean my Spotify Wrapped is going to be filled with K-pop Demon Hunters films, and I'm not ashamed to say that. I know that you know I may not That's be the target audience for that. I'm not the target audience maybe for that film, but I really enjoyed it a lot. I'm really looking forward to her, I forget her name, but the director, it's two directors. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to the next thing they do. So
well, very good.
For someone who hasn't seen the film yet, my friend and his daughter, they have it blasting all the time, Mark. So
Jesus.
The songs have been quite catchy, and I'm just like, yeah, I should probably see this movie.
You should.
Yeah, you have not. How can you not? Yeah, you have to see it.
I'll check it out.
We always just keep praising it.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up as well. I had it listed under my surprises. Mm-hmm.
Before you go into, I just want to say, because I couldn't think of her name, Maggie Kang and Chris Appelhans. Those are the directors. But sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to give them credit.
But I saw it pop up on Netflix and I thought, well, this looks interesting. And then my daughter kept mentioned to me like every week, Dad, you should watch K-pop Demon Hunters. And I watched it. I was like, yeah, that's really good. I like it, you know? So, and I assume there'll be more because it's been very successful. So, yeah.
Well, what's the best, Todd? What are your best of the summer?
I think I really liked F1. I was surprised by that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a movie I had on my list at all. It just didn't feel like it was going to be my kind of movie. But when I walked out of it, I was just like, yeah, that's cool. I had a lot of fun with F1. So, you know, I'm definitely not a car guy or, you know, I it was like a foreign language to me half the time because I didn't understand some of the stuff they were talking about. But it's still an exciting movie for me. So I really enjoyed that one. I really liked Nobody 2 as well. August in general, I really liked August. There's a few others.
It's been a pretty solid August.
It's been a good August. Maybe talk about a few others later, but Nobody 2 just hit me in the right spot. I mean, the first Nobody did as well, but, you know, this is a guy similar in age to me. I love the premise because I've said all along that vacation is not relaxing for the dad of the family. I've been through that many times myself. It's stressful when you're the dad taking your family on vacation, and Nobody Too so perfectly, you know, brought that to light. And I loved, you know, having a third act that was basically Home Alone in a rundown amusement park. So I liked that one a lot. And then Final Destination Bloodlines. I shouldn't have been surprised at how much I enjoyed it because this is a series that is consistently quite good. And but I don't think I was expecting Bloodlines to be one of the best of the series, which I think it is. So, yeah.
All right. Abe, let's get to you. What are your favorites of the summer?
Favorites of the summer, a lot of smaller films. Mark mentioned them as well. You know, Weapons, Eddington. And then, like, if I could say, like, a favorite of the summer that is, like, a broad general, like, stroke, I would say premium format theaters. Because, like, IMAX had, like, a really strong summer, and people came out to come and see them. And I think this is, like, the effect that a Chris Nolan might have and or other directors that are like, I want to shoot in IMAX, specifically like Ryan Coogler. Before summer, he had Sinners, and people were like, here are the preparations that this is what I chose. And so people were very curious about it. So premium format stuff was fantastic. But 28 Years Later was a summer favorite of mine. And, you know, Todd just mentioned it too, but Final Destination Bloodlines, we had our mid-year things, and both of those movies made my list. I positive summer throughout, but Todd, you also snuck in what I was going to mention. It's like August was like a pretty good August. Sometimes you don't really have, maybe you have like one or two gems, and it seems like every week I was like, oh, there's some good stuff here, because I think I even seen like Sorry Baby in August as well. So it was just like a lot of good stuff that I watched in August.
All right. My best of the summer is Superman, by far.
How many times have you seen it now?
I've seen it 3 times. Yeah. If I had time, I'd see it again in theaters, but I'll just wait till it comes out on 4K eventually at this point. Being one that's not a huge Superman fan when it comes to just the character, despite the fact that I still think the Donner film is among the, you know, Mount Rushmore of Superman movies or of superhero movies.
Absolutely.
I was looking forward to Superman. I like James Gunn. That was what was, you know, guiding me along as far as anticipation. But I just really fell for what this movie was doing. I just really like these characters, the way it set up this new iteration of the DC universe. I just had a blast with this movie in a way where I could just see myself continually watching it and just using that as a way to relax, like in a way that other like bombastic summer movies don't necessarily provide, where this one just feels like I'm comfortable watching it. In a way that's similar, not unlike some of the Guardians movies, as far as how they balance like emotion and action and what have you. So no, I was just really, really big on Superman. I was very happy you didn't.
Aaron has it playing on a loop in his pocket universe.
I'm constantly telling myself I'm a punk rocker. Yes, I am. Yeah.
You should go to his house. He actually has like a chauffeur, and it looks just like that Mr. Nobody guy.
Aaron, what I want to know is Mr. Terrific going to get his own film?
Mr. Terrific. Oh, yeah. Man.
Sorry, I mean, the thought, I mean, I'd love to see it, but the thought, like, the weekend after, they're like, Jimmy Olsen and Mr. Terrific, they're the two characters that might get their own spinoff series at some point. So, like, All right, if you want to get Ultra Riz, Jimmy Olsen, and the terrific Mr. Terrific having their own shows, I'm not against it, because they are... That movie, just in terms of just characters alone, there's just so many like fun things that I didn't expect.
Yeah,
which is the best thing about it, as far as just along with having the stuff that I prefer to see in a Superman movie.
Sure.
It also had just characters I didn't think would like take off in the way they would, as far as being things I enjoyed the most about the movie. So
yeah, I was fearful when they had, you know, they announced all these different characters that were going to be in there, you know, Mr. Terrific and
the Justice
Guy Gardner, Green Lantern, and things like that. I was like, oh, are we just going to throw a bunch of characters in there for the heck of it? You know, just build the universe. These are lower level characters and things like that. But Gunn made great use of them. And I appreciated that his approach to this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the Donner film. I'm with Aaron. It's one of the greatest superhero films ever. And I love Donner's approach to, you know, that this is Superman in the real world, you know, the verisimilitude attitude. But I loved Gunn saying, okay, that was great, but we're making a comic book. We're making a live action comic book. Nothing is off the table. And that was a lot of fun.
Mark?
I was just going to say, we saw David Corenswet in Twisters, and I knew at the time he's going to be Superman, and I was not convinced. I'm like, I don't know. He was the best, as far as I'm concerned. He and Rachel Brosnahan together, as their chemistry, best thing about the film. I thought they were incredible, and they hit all the right tones exactly as I think those characters should be. So I was surprised. Like I thought, you know, he was competent in Twisters, but I wasn't prepared for how well he would embody that role. And Rachel Brosnahan too, just the right, you know, of course, Margot Kidder. I mean, she, you know, occupies a special place in my heart as Lois Lane. So it's hard to approximate that kind of, you know, what she brought to that role, but Rachel Brosnahan did her. She, you know, she had a slightly different take, but there were, you know, the DNA of Margot Kidder was in there, and that's okay. I really like what she brought to it.
It's funny because the casting of her, like the casting of the whole Superman movie, when everything was happening, you know, pre-production wise going, the second I said Brosnahan, I'm just thinking of her and Miss Maisel, and I'm like, well, they nailed that. Like that's the one character I wasn't worried about. Like of all the characters,
right.
Well, I'll say too, I think Nicholas Holt made a great Lex Luthor. Too.
He did. Yeah. I was very happy with Nicholas Holt.
Gene Hackman is always going to be very special to be in that role, but yeah, I'm fine with what Nicholas Holt was doing.
If I could jump on this praise train for Superman, I'd say that I really enjoyed the press run of this too.
Oh, yeah.
They had incredible, the actors, the director, they seemed like they all really enjoyed working with each other. A lot of the things that they released, specifically from like the James Gunn account or the official Superman account of the back behind the scenes stuff, really just enforce a like, oh, well, like James Gunn just really did give a shit about trying to make a good movie here too. And he wanted to make David Corenswet into a star. And yeah, like the way that he employed Lex Luthor, it's incredible. He's just like, I want you to be the villain, even though you didn't get the main part. And that's got to eat into, you know, the way that he plays the character, too. It's fantastic. So good work.
Yeah. Other best I had, like, I really like Weapons as well. I was a big fan of Weapons. Yeah. I liked Life of Chuck quite a bit.
Sure.
And honestly, highest, lowest, of course. I'm a big Spike Lee.
Yes, kinda, yeah. Like that. Another August release.
That really delivered for me. I was very happy with that. But this has been a pretty good summer for comedies. I was very happy. Friendship, Splitsville, I really, really like. Phoenician Scheme, the various animated movies that all, you know, are ostensibly have comedy.
What did you think of The Naked Gun?
Oh, I love The Naked Gun.
I was going to say, that when you say comedies, I actually was quite impressed with that.
I forgot to write it down. But no.
Oh, okay.
There's just a lot of just really good comedies that came out.
Oh, my gosh. Liam Neeson.
That's what I can't wait to watch again.
That's the kind of movie I want to see him in. I don't need to see him in these generic, you know, you took my daughter and I'm going to get you. I want to see the riff on that. And he was just, I mean, like as good as Leslie Nielsen is in that, where he was, you know, once a serious actor, he was in Forbidden Planet, and then he went into this comedy realm. I think Liam Neeson could also do that really effectively.
Well, and if you're talking, I like surprises too when it comes to performances. I mean, Pamela Anderson nails it.
She's really good.
Yeah. She's totally really, really good in that movie. And I mean, that's one I listed as a surprise. You know, I think I had high hopes for it because I loved the original series of films. I wasn't sure if they could make it work again. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I did have a bit of confidence in Akiva Schaffer because I think he's done really well with high concept comedies. Yeah. I mean, Pop Star is a lot of fun. I loved the Chip and Dale thing that he did.
I love that film.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, he was the right guy for this job. So I think he pulled it off quite well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with the good comes some of the bad. So as far as worst of the summer go, or least favorites at least, Mark, what were some of the lesser entries for the summer?
So I just could not get behind Karate Kid Legends. I didn't care for that film. Mm-hmm. It just was generic and rote and everything. It just was so recycled and everything. I mean, I don't really need to go into it, but they were able to get all the, you know, past stars to show up, but it just wasn't something that I enjoyed. And what else? Oh, and you know what? I've gotten to the point. I just don't like this Jurassic World Rebirth. I just did not. I like the dinosaurs, but you need to provide a story beyond that. And that family that they inserted into the drama was just I couldn't stand them. So it's not enough. And I know, Aaron, you're a big fan of the Jurassic series. It's kind of like
hold on here. Where does this come from? I have very much said that I think this is a B-minus franchise, and the sequels are often lackluster.
Okay, maybe I thought you liked it more.
I think this is the best sequel because the sequels are generally not very good.
Yeah, I liked Jurassic World.
World's fine.
Yeah, I thought they finally delivered. Like, you know, now the park is open, and they delivered on that. And of course, the first film is iconic. But you know, honestly, the everything else, I'm just kind of varying. So I didn't think Jurassic World Rebirth was the worst. But it's in the, I really don't care for this series very much, and it was another one. So anyway, and yeah, I'll just limit it to those two. Those were block, you know, wannabe. Well, Jurassic World Rebirth was a legitimate blockbuster. Karate Kid Legends wanted to be, and it failed, and rightfully so.
Todd?
Well, I disagree with the Karate Kid Legends. I was on that episode, and
you were on that episode.
We were pretty positive.
I think I was the least positive.
Yeah. No, I mean, I literally up until a few minutes before recording forgot the title of this movie altogether because it was so forgettable. But Shadow Force was one of the worst ones I think I saw this summer. Nothing exciting about it. I think I nearly fell asleep a couple times in that movie.
I'm like Googling Shadow Force, like, what is that? And then I'm like, oh yeah, I sort of vaguely remember that. Kerry Washington and Marseille.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then this animated film that hit Netflix here in August that Jenny Tartakovsky did, Fixed, is just horrid. It is absolutely horrid. I love his animation style. Yeah. The interesting animation is the only thing the film has going for it. I mean, it feels like it was written by a 12-year-old. It's just terrible.
Mm-hmm. All right, Abe.
Yeah, I guess in the realm of disappointments, because I didn't really hate anything that came out, but disappointments, certainly, I was on the Mark train too with Karate Kid Legends. I was like, it's kind of flat for me. I don't hate it, but it's kind of flat. And then John Wick, we had a really good discussion about Ballerina and just how it had some ideas, but it didn't really take off. Materialists was one where I'm still conflicted about, you know, there's some really good writing, but also as a whole complete thing, maybe not. But I've loved Celine Song's like post-release press run of just like, please don't make fun of my movie. Like, this actually really means something to me because, you know, art is not something that you can make fun of, which I've been like, yes, please more of that, directors. And Fantastic Four just was flat for me too. And we talked about that.
Aww. In
I dug Fantastic Four. Yeah,
I did too. Yeah. I would actually call if I was going to pick my favorite blockbusters, I would have picked F1 and Fantastic Four. I thought those two delivered.
Yeah. just the capturing the the Jack Kirby aesthetic that they did with Fantastic Four was really cool.
A big part of that film is the look. Like you sort of have to luxuriate in a mood and the 60s and that, and that's a big part of that. But that's cinema. So, you know, and if you're also another thing that I liked about it, you didn't have to be you didn't have to study the history of
all the other previous movies.
Yeah, Marvel to understand it. You could just come to it.
Standalone.
And it was simple. If you're going to criticize and say, well, it was a very simple film, it was. But and I actually appreciated about that about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Aaron?
Fixed was on my list as easily the worst thing I've seen this summer. I'm such a big Jendi Tartakovsky fan, so I was like...
You really are.
He made all these Hotel Transylvania movies... And then he can't make his damn Popeye movie that he wants to make, and he makes this, and I'm like, what is this? This is terrible. This song, this is garbage. I hate it. I did not enjoy watching this. The Home, that Pete Davidson horror movie that came out, is just really, really bad. There was a movie with Al Pacino and Dan Stevens called The Ritual that came out earlier this summer. That's not good. And there was that Fear Street movie, Prom Queen, that I really disliked as well. These are like also like streaming movies and like small stuff. I'm trying to think of like what's the bigger movies that came out. Like by default, it's probably either Smurfs or I Know What You Did Last Summer, movies I saw on the same day that came out on the same weekend. but it's like it's not like I expected much from those. But I mean, they're not good. That's not an excuse. It doesn't make it better. Smurfs, I could give credit for at least like it's. Being for kids, for kids, doesn't make any excuses about that it is for kids. So it's like, you know, whatever. There are better kids movies, but like, it's not like, it didn't have like lazy adult jokes. It just kind of went like, this is purely for kids and that's what we're doing. I know he did last summer. It's just a bad movie.
How was Rihanna?
Rihanna was certainly in it.
Rihanna is Smurfette.
Rihanna's not at all. She's not at all the prop.
New music.
I do wish the music. I do wish the song was better. I didn't dislike the song, but I was hoping for like a better song.
Yeah, it's That's not what, golden, huh?
It's one of the times that, like, you know, I use my Spotify account and I'm like, okay, let me see what is the song, and I listen to it and I'm like, oh no, this is utterly forgettable.
It's not. Yeah, it wasn't like I was really relying on that being like, well, at least we'll get maybe one banger in the same way that the Despicable Me movies give me constantly Pharrell bangers. But
sure, yeah,
no, this didn't do it for me.
But we're not going to have Rihanna performing at the Oscars with a bunch of Smurfs behind her and all that. You know.
We're saved from that. So
No, but I do look forward to which K-pop Demon Hunter song they'll nominate.
Yeah, there you go.
And hopefully they get the right one, unlike, you know, that debacle with the Lin-Manuel Miranda
movie. Here's the thing, Abe. Any one of those would be a good nomination. That's where I'm at with them.
I hear you. Yeah.
It has. They have to do Golden. I mean, that's the one. It was the biggest hit. I like a whole bunch of the songs, but that's the one that I think anyone can get on board with.
I think that's the go to for that for sure. But if they put How It's Done on there, I'd be like, fuck yeah. If they put Takedown on there, I'd be like, fuck yeah.
So they could do multiples, like, right?
A choice, but fuck yeah.
Yeah, they could do a medley, that's, right?
But I mean, they're still allowed to nominate multiple songs, right? From the same movie. Yeah, that's.
I don't know if anyone but Disney's ever had that happen. That'd be my curiosity. If any other studio besides Disney's ever had that.
I think. Multiple. Yeah, I mean, it helps that they did release it to the theaters, but I don't know. It being a Netflix streaming title originally might hurt the film. I think some people might view it like
it would hurt it as far as its chances of winning, but it wouldn't disqualify it. But that's certainly, but you know, the more things go to streaming, whatever. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. we got time for that.
That's another conversation.
Exactly. I know you guys have talked about some surprises already, but any other surprises? Mark, do you have any surprises? Nope.
Well, so I actually was surprised with how much I liked Lilo and Stitch. I mean, it's the number one film of this summer. When I walked in there, I thought, oh, you know, another animated to live action thing. We've seen so many of these. It's coming on the heels of Snow White, which I did not care for. And, you know, but I had reason to think like this would not be messed up, and they didn't mess it up. It actually was enjoyable. I wouldn't call it great art, but I think, you know, if you're going to make a live action version of that movie, or, you know, the animated film, I think they did as good a job as they could have. I thought the little girl was absolutely delightful. So they actually cast a little girl. I mean, she's not like a, you know, a 13-year-old trying to be a 5-year-old. She looks like a little girl, and she's enjoyable. And I liked her chemistry with the CGI, you know, Stitch. I mean, it was believable. So I get why it was a hit, you know, mm-hmm. and another thing I'll take up for it, which nobody liked, but I liked Megan 2.0. I actually hated the first Megan. I didn't like that. And so I walked into that thing. I thought the trailer had promise. I walked into the film and I enjoyed it. I thought they had the sort of winking, funny, jokey, you know, idea for the film, and I liked it. I mean, again, I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was enjoyable, and it totally flopped. And for the most part, I think people feel like it was not as good as the original. And I guess I'm one of the few voices that thought, no, I actually enjoyed it more.
Well, Todd, how about you? Any Arthur surprises? Well,
I'll jump off of that and, you know, say that I had Megan 2.0 down as a disappointment. It's funny because actually this is a case where going into the summer, I had not seen the original Megan yet. And I literally watched the first Megan two nights before I went and saw Megan 2.0. And so I had the right fresh in my mind and I was kind of like, yeah, nah, I'm not liking what the second one's doing here as much. I don't think it was terrible, but it was a disappointment, especially being fresh off of the first one. But as far as surprises, I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Freakier Friday. I think that movie was way better than it had any right being. And I found myself laughing a lot. I think I was the only 54-year-old male in the audience that day. I could tell it was.
Well, there were fathers, I'm sure.
But it wasn't 50-year-old, 4-year-old male Thursdays. So
not when I saw it on, when I saw it on a Friday afternoon, it was all either mothers with their young daughters or the people who were teenagers when the first one came out.
Got it. Okay.
So I was
definitely nostalgia.
Yeah, but I thought it was a lot of fun, and I was laughing out loud at several points in that movie. So it just hit me the right way, I guess.
Is Abe? I mean, the surprise was kind of just my screening audience with weapons. Like, I really enjoyed that screening audience and how people were laughing along, shouting at the screen, screaming at jump scares. It was a really fun time.
All right. It's been like when I saw that K-pop Demon Hunters was a thing, my thought was I need to see this because I love that title. Like that was where my head was. I was so on board just based on like it's called K-pop Demon Hunters and it's a movie, not a TV series. Let me watch this thing immediately. But I didn't get to it for like a couple weeks. So when I finally did, I was delighted that it wasn't just like my own sensibilities of what I want to see, but like it's a movie that works on like lots of levels. I don't listen to K-pop, so like I was happy that the songs were just great to the point where I'm like, do I need to listen to more K-pop now? But I enjoyed the music, I enjoyed the animation, I enjoyed the story it went for. Like it just has it has everything going for it in a way that if it only had two of those things going for it, I would have been like, fine. But the fact that it has so many things going for it, I'm like, oh yeah, this movie rocks. This is just out of control good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the animation was really creative in it, I thought. You know, there were just moments that it did some things that I wasn't expecting that I thought were really good. So
I realized after the fact that it was a Sony movie that went to Netflix as opposed to a Netflix original. That said, Netflix does some pretty good animated movies too. So like either way, it just worked for me. Mm-hmm. Mark?
I think one of the things that captures is because I'm not a K-pop fan, or at least, you know, I haven't listened to a lot of it, and it captures the fandom, like the excitement that the people who love that music have. And these crowd scenes of the different it's, you know, diverse. It's like the little old ladies and the group of three men and then the little girls, and they're all like cheering for this band, and it captures that sort of excitement. And even though I'm not part of that, I sort of felt like, wait, I am part of it because I'm enjoying this just as much as they are. So it really was made from a place of love, and the people did their homework. They got people who really do write for Blackpink BTS, and so they're actual. I mean, these songs. I mean, I've heard the hits that BTS has had, and I've heard a couple songs from Blackpink. I mean, and the good ones are really good, and these are just as good, if not better. I mean, they took K-pop at least, and it's possible that, you know, people who live and breathe this music will say, oh, well, this is sort of like a dumbing down of the music or something, you know. But I, as far as me, I thought it was wonderful. It got me into it. I mean, like Aaron, I feel like maybe I need to start listening to a little more K-pop. Maybe I enjoy, you know. I mean, and the K-pop is basically just Korean pop music. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Sweden has this music and America has this music.
Nobody likes S-pop.
Well, I mean, you know.
Well, until we make the movie about it.
Right.
As Pop Troll Hunters.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, it's a great idea.
As far as other surprises go, I mean, if this movie won the award for trailer I got the most tired of, The Roses, I guess it's a surprise that I liked the movie quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, like, it has that going for it. Dangerous Animals. Dangerous Animals, which is the shark/serial killer movie featuring Jai Courtney as a serial killer who
you talked about this.
Victims as he feeds them to sharks.
Yeah.
This movie's way more fun than I expected it to be. I thought it'd be maybe just schlocky Shudder, and instead,
and
it's like,
you do Shudder. Not like Jai Courtney.
I have my thoughts on Jai Courtney.
You do, and I've taken note.
But here he gets to play just Australian dirtbag, and that's the best kind of Jai Courtney.
Yeah, that actually is true. Yeah.
So
maybe it's typecasting,
which is why he works for Captain Boomerang.
I'm all for Australian dirtbag Jai Courtney because he's a lot of fun here. He's unhinged. I think the female lead, Hallie Hasstrom, I believe, like she's very good. Mm-hmm. I think the plot, thank you. Okay. I'm thinking of Lassie Hallström, the director. I think that it, for a movie like this, the kind of thing that it's going for, I think it knocks out the tension really well and feeds into what people like about, like, both shark movies and serial killer movies all in one bloody package. So I was quite a fan of Dangerous Animals. I know friend of the show, Jay Kluin, of course, is like a huge fan. I believe it's him and Mark Hoffmeyer of the Deep Blue Sea podcast. It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
All right. Disappointments. Mark, what disappointments did you have for the summer?
I mean, it would be like anything. Let me think. Not really. I mean, I had movies that I didn't like. I guess if I was going to say a disappointment, I mean, Bring Her Back was a film. It was directed by the guys that did
Talk to Me.
Talk to Me,
which
I loved. It was like one of my favorites of that year. And I can appreciate it's sort of a mixed bag because there's a lot about Bring Her Back that is great, the mood and everything, but it just this children in peril is such a delicate thing to handle. And sometimes Weapons has it, but it's handled in a way that's, you know, acceptable. But in Bring Her Back, it really crossed the line for me. And I just could not handle the way that these kids were being abused on screen. And it got into like a level where I actually was uncomfortable with it. So Bring Her Back was something that there's art there.
Their job is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, but
I know what you're saying. It's a very uncomfortable movie.
But you understand what you're saying, that it's also you can be so crossed over the line that it's like, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that one. Because I really did kind of go into there thinking I loved Talk to Me. Uh-huh. And again, Bring Her Back. I mean, there's art there. The person, the brothers that put it together, they know what they're doing. But I think maybe needed an editor or something to say, okay, you need to take that scene out. This is too much.
Sure.
And to kind of steer it more towards a better. Also, Sally Hawkins. I mean, talk about performances. I mean, you know, if you saw Happy Go Lucky and then you watch this, you're like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest actress in the world. I mean,
she kind of is one of the greatest actresses in the world.
She is. Yeah. Right. But I'm just trying to give.
I know
the
what
range.
You're saying. Yeah. Bring Her Back. Like, I liked it a lot, but it is a decidedly different movie in terms of tone than Talk to Me. Talk to Me is as brutal as it is, it's still kind of a party movie. There's a fun factor to the kids getting into mischief idea, despite
right. And the Talk to Me had teenagers, which you're a little bit more like, you know, Halloween. I can see them getting you know diced up, but children. These are, and one was blind, and it was just it's too much.
Well, Todd, how about you? Any disappointments of the summer?
I mean, I've covered most of them, I guess. Maybe throw out one other thing. Happy Gilmore 2, which I didn't think was bad. I had a certain degree of fun with it, but I think there's like there's some miscalculations with it. There's like a dark shadow over that movie, you know, without spoiling certain plot points, I guess. I mean, there's such a negative cloud over parts of it that I thought that's not what I wanted in Happy Gilmore 2. I still had a certain degree of fun with it, but you know, I think they went about some of it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't disappointed. I was just sad because I knew it wouldn't be. I didn't like it. I think it. There's like 40 minutes in there of the nearly 2 hour runtime of Happy Gilmore 2 that I was like, all right, but for the most part, I was like, nah, this is another Netflix streaming comedy. That's what we got. Anything else?
No, I think we've covered it.
Abe?
Just personally, Mission Impossible needed to make more money because I had it number two. And everybody was like, Abe, it's going to track the same way the other ones have tracked.
They make the same amount of money every single time.
No, Tom Cruise flew on a plane and told you to see him at the movies and people will show out. And they did not.
No, the previous one didn't do that well. Therefore, math says it'll do better this time.
I could have gotten 50 points if I didn't put it there. So that's the only one I'll shout out.
I can't say Megan was, because I barely liked the first Megan. So, like, Megan 2, I was
like, it more than,
Megan, I liked Megan more than Megan 2, but I was still like, I had higher hopes for Megan 2 based on what they're selling me. Because if you're going to sell me T2, but Megan, I'm not against that. That sounds right. Fun. And I just kind of delivered more on
that's
that.
That's what I liked.
I mean, when it did that, yes, it just didn't do that as much as I wanted to. Instead, it's like, let's have another hour of padding to go on our nearly 2 hour movie. Anyway, it didn't do much for me. Mm-hmm. The Old Guard 2, which I didn't necessarily, again, have high hopes for because they didn't have Jada Pinkett-Smith back as director, but I really like The Old Guard. I think that's a fun story, and I was hoping for at least better than what I got with Old Guard 2, which kind of just. It gives me this weird cliffhanger movie where now I'm like, nobody watched this. So I'm never going to get three, it seems. So like, this is just kind of a waste. I don't know if you guys ever remember, there was another Simple Favor that came out this year.
That's right. Yeah.
And
Paul Feig had to do a lot of defense on social media.
And it just didn't do much for me and just kind of came and went.
Yeah.
Honey Don't wasn't big on, and it's like, it's a Coen brother thing. So I'm like, I'm naturally drawn to Coen brothers. But
it's a singular. Yeah.
I mean, a singular gave me Macbeth, which I loved.
But that's the one where I was like, oh, I see where that talent
Ethan's
is.
Just not doing it for me by himself here. I'm big on Joel. Yeah. Solo Joel, but Ethan less so. So yeah, those are ones that are just kind of like, I wish for better from those than what I was getting. We got some feedback as well.
We did get some feedback.
Let's go over what some of the listeners thought or some of their.
Yeah. First question here is time to wrap things up. What were your favorite and least favorite films of the summer and any surprises? Former summer box office gamble champion Marcus Robinson writes favorite films, Sorry Baby, Weapons, and Friendship. Least favorite, The Phoenician Scheme, which is why Aaron chose the poster.
That's not why I chose the poster.
And then Philip Hurd writes in, Mission Impossible, : The Final Reckoning, and The Phoenician Scheme were my favorites.
Can I get some thoughts on this poster, by the way? I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah, we're so slim, and our arms are like, you know, like we work out.
Dave Maloof, he writes, Weapons, Highest to Lowest, Materialist, Superman, 28 Years Later, Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, and Thunderbolts. Does It Feeds on Hulu count as a surprise? What's It Feeds? Anyone watch what
I don't know, but I'm going to accept it because we've been talking about a lot of like streaming Netflix stuff, too.
Let's see. with Ashley Green and Sean Iceman Ashmore. Gotta check this out, apparently. A young girl insists that a malevolent entity is feeding on her and is anguished, and her anguished father desperately struggles to protect his own daughter. Yeah, 88% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Full-length movie feature, so yeah, of course it counts.
Yeah, it's a movie. Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, that helps right there.
Good call
there.
That
said it came out in April, so no, never mind. Doesn't
count. Oh, yeah.
You were just
David, read the rules.
Chris Cleveland writes, surprise are definitely weapons, but I should have known better after Barbarian. Other faves have been Bring Her Back, 28 Years Later, Together, and The Naked Gun. Worst films were the sequels, The Old Guard 2 and Happy Gilmore 2.
There you go. Yeah.
Okay, so this
link for that feedback. Feedback.
I got one more question for you guys.
Oh,
so we don't end on disappointments, so I figure we should bring things up. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about potential biggest films of the next summer.
Wow.
I'm going to read to you a list of films that are probably going to be in the top three, and I want you guys to tell me what you think of those are going to be probably maybe the number one of the summer. So
you're putting me on the spot.
It's an on the spot question. That's all. I'm not saying this is your final list. I'm just saying I'm just going to read some movies and just tell all me right. which of this batch do you think will be like which could potentially be a number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pulling up some lists here myself.
We have The Devil Wears Prada 2, The Mandalorian and Grogu, Supergirl, untitled Steven Spielberg sci-fi project, Toy Story 5, Minions 3, Moana live action, The Odyssey, and Spider-Man Brand New Day. Of those, which all feel like they have potential to be very high in the summer, what are you thinking? What are you thinking probably top the list next year?
I mean, the Star Wars fan that I am, I have to look to Mandalorian, but at the same time, after the huge performance of Lilo and Stitch, I've got to think Moana is going to be a really strong contender next year.
You also named a Toy Story film too, yeah?
Is that Toy Story?
Yeah. I mean, it's a Pixar franchise instead of a Pixar original, so that's
their most prized franchise.
It's got a number in it. So,
I know. I'm keeping that in mind because I want to try and be top five next year. So, I'll go with the Toy Story pick.
Right, Mark. Any thoughts?
I'll go with the Spider-Man one.
See, I'm between, Spider-Man and Toy Story seem like good bets.
Mm-hmm. But not the unannounced Steven Spielberg project?
Steven Spielberg sci-fi project I'm certainly excited for.
And, War of the Worlds Part 2?
Yeah. If this was 1984, like, sure. Easily, number one.
maybe he's finally making Jaws 19.
It's E.T. Returns, yeah.
But,
he's got a family now.
But no, like between Toy Story and Spider-Man, those seem like just like easy wins. But
sure,
fucking Moana, man. Like, who knows? Like, Moana is the biggest film on Disney Plus. Like, in terms of streaming, easily by far, Moana. So the idea of doing and that second one, which sucks, made $1.5 billion.
Oh my gosh!
So like the idea of doing a live action Moana, like. Who knows how much money that could make? It could be ginormous. it's a rough spot to be. But like Toy Story makes so much money, and people love Spider-Man. So who knows? That's a rough spot to be in. I don't know. Toy Story 5 might be the angle to go for, but who knows? We got a whole year to think about this. But
exactly. Yeah, and a lot of movies in between.
For sure, but just want to throw that out there so we can go back to this recording next year and see how wrong we are when, like, The Devil Wears Prada 2 somehow, like, emerges.
Looking over the list, I'm going, I hope Moana and The Odyssey open the same weekend so we can have Moadyssey like we had Barbenheimer,
You heard it here first, folks.
I mean, hashtag Moadyssey.
I mean, they're not, but I do like the sound. But the sound of Moadyssey does roll off the tongue pretty well compared to some of these other junky ones that people want to make. So, I just like the sound of Moadyssey.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've done it. We've gone over the summer movie season of 2025. We've talked about who succeeded this summer, who didn't. Mark, once again, congratulations on becoming the new champion for a year.
Thank you. I will be a benevolent king.
Okay. And yes, this has been all a lot of good fun. So that's gonna do it for this bonus episode of Out Now 38. You can find everything I do at my personal Substack page, so Sakutazeet.substack.com. I write for League of Entertainment and Wise of Blue. I co-host the podcast Two Black Guys Talk Godzilla. Feel free to check that one out. Terrence and I talk about Godzilla films on a bi-weekly basis. And all the socials at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
For reference and for my Instagram, abe.will. And Blue Sky, Twitter, /WalrusMoose, # congratulations, Bark, # fast film reviews.
Todd Liebenow, where can people find more of you online?
So the podcast is called The Forgotten Filmcast. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcasts. We're on all the socials. Just look for @ForgottenFilms. Films is spelled with a Z.
Great. And summer, 13th annual Summer Movie Gamble champion, Mark Hoban. Where can people find more of you online?
You can read my reviews on my personal blog, fastfilmreviews.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoban.
Very good. You can find this podcast every week.
We're online. Yeah, on Google. Places.
Google us. Yes, please give us ratings and reviews. That'd be great. Help us the show. Help keep us going and encouraging more shenanigans when it comes to summer movie gambles. But yeah, that's going to do it. Next week's show is The Conjuring Last Rites. But yeah, that's bring us to the end of the summer. End of summer 2025, as far as movies are concerned. Congratulations to Mark. Thanks to all the participants in said contest, including Marcus. And that's good. So once again, thanks, Todd, Mark. Thank you for joining us this week for this bonus episode.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks for having us. It's fun talking about movies. So always appreciate it.
For sure. Yeah. Until next time. So long.
And goodbye.
Year, you know, so exactly. It should be comfortable.
When I'm not on camera, I'm wearing this crap.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. This is when the
I thought maybe you had gone to Burger King recently. And
that too. Yeah.
I don't go to Burger King. I like In and Out and Krispy Kreme hats like a man.
What are you talking about? Nobody dislikes the charbroiled, flame-broiled taste.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. I'm already reporting. We got the Burger King bit.
Good.
Not a sponsor.
All right.